cut that off, but I also like to stay on time, so we'll call the meeting to order. Let's start by going around the room with introductions, and we'll start over on that side, do the outside circle, and then come to the middle.
I'm Ben Holcomb, and if you recall Jody Gardberg, she's been part of this group for a while. I'm the new Jody, so if that's easier for you guys to understand, that's who I am.
What's that vision mark called?
Thank you, Jody.
We'll call you Ben. I'm Brian Cotto, the director of the Division of Forestry Fire and State Lands.
Laura Olt with Forestry Fire and State Lands.
Jamie Barnes, Forestry Fire and State Lands.
Steve Erickson, Utah Audubon Council.
Ann Ville, the Nature Conservancy.
Hey, I gotta stop you, you can't sit there. You're in violation of the fire code.
So there's
Here I am, Sam, sit right here. Don't let it happen again.
Dusty Early, environmental consultant.
Nika Roundy, Davis County Economic Development.
Georgie Carter, the Great Salt Lake Audubon.
Heather Dove, president of Great Salt Lake Audubon.
Keith Larson with Bowen Collins. I'm here with the State Regional Conservation Goals.
Steve Early, local waterfowl hunter, and less so Ann, almost retired from that. Switch over to wildlife photography, and just for transparency, I'm also on the Utah State Water Quality Board.
I'm Jeff Dunbleicher with Jacobs Engineering.
Marie Seibert with Water Resources, and I just like to be with you.
Chris Montague, I'm a contractor with Nature Conservancy.
Rob Hartman, U.S. Magnesium.
Jan Stripe, League of Women Voters.
Nick Scow, Utah Rivers Council.
Max Malmquist, I'm the Outreach Associate for the Audubon Sea Lakes Program.
Brian Tapney, Saline Lakes Ecologist for the National Audubon Society.
Hi, I'm Marcel Shoup, National Audubon Society. Donna Ramore, University of Utah Environmental Dispute Resolution Program.
Candace Hassenjager with the Division of Water Resources.
Steve Jones, Hanson Allen Moose. I'm also here for the State Conservation Goals.
Rob Sobey, Hanson Allen Moose.
Division of Water Resources.
Craig Miller, Division of Water Resources.
Todd Adams, Deputy Director of Division of Water Resources.
Tom Ward, representing municipalities.
Dave Livermore with the Nature Conservancy.
Jeff Scott, Box Elder County.
Randy Elliott, Davis County.
Don Leonard, the Great Salt Lake Branch from Cooperative.
And I'm Jake Vanderlaan with the Division of Water Quality.
And I'm Laura Vernon with Forestry Fire and State Lands. And behind Commissioner Scott
I'm
is...
I'm Tim Hobbs. Oh. I'm just here to watch the back. Commissioner Scott.
Thank you.
And nobody can leave here without signing the sign-in sheet.
Have a seat.
So you know.
Some people just can't leave at all.
None of us may leave.
Well, thank you all for being here. We appreciate your interest in the Great Salt Lake. We have just five of our 11 advisory council members, so we don't even have a quorum. We're going to march through the agenda anyway, and when we have a quorum, which I expect, we'll come back and conduct or redo our votes. I should mention that Todd Bingham asked to be excused. He's at another board meeting that he had to attend. As you know, Carlton Christensen, in terms of membership, you remain a member until your successor is appointed, and Todd Christensen accepted a position with the UTA board. And because of the vacancy in the county, Salt Lake County chair position, his replacement hasn't been appointed yet. He does have an alternate, Will Summercorn, who has not been able to make it as yet. Carrie Gibson also, as you know, has a position with the Department of Natural Resources and is no longer an active participant. His name's still on our rolls until the Weaver County Commission gets organized, which they did a couple of days ago with two new commissioners. And they'll appoint his replacement. So we're down to, I expect Jeff Richards is at a court action and said he would be here, but I'll be a few minutes later. Dan Tuttle has asked Tom Tripp to represent him as an alternate, and Tom told me yesterday he would be here, so I'm counting on him being here. And I expect Leland to arrive as well, so hopefully we'll get there. Let's move along. I've given the council membership report already. Let me briefly comment on the projects. As you know, last year we agreed to commission two projects, two reports. The first one is a report on the consequences of drying lake systems around the world to try to illustrate and highlight what happens when lake levels decline in systems around the world. We had three applicants for that contract. AECOM was selected, submitted a bid proposal that was acceptable in terms of cost, are already underway, and we actually expect their final report before our next meeting. So we expect them to present it at the next meeting in March. The second proposal, a more comprehensive proposal, was for an assessment of potential costs of declining water levels of the Great Salt Lake. So a little closer at home to try to assess avoided costs, if you will, from declining water levels. We had six applicants for that proposal. Eco Northwest, teamed with Martin Nicholson, were the winning applicant, and they're already underway. That's a more comprehensive study and report, and we're expecting to receive a final report just prior to our July meeting. So hopefully they'll be able to come and present that at our July meeting. So far, so good, and we're looking forward to the results of those two studies. Any questions or comments? Okay, let's go to the next item, the technical team research report. Let me just add a little update before we jump there. You know, I'm generally a little picky about it, but we're getting full here, and we've got some empty seats, so the next person that comes in, invite them up, please. Last meeting, we approved a letter to the governor recommending that the state of Utah should implement an overall policy that supports effective allocation and administration of water flow to the Great Salt Lake and the use of water within its watershed to maintain or increase lake levels while appropriately balancing economic, social, and environmental needs. Basically, to make it a state priority by policy to protect lake levels of the Great Salt Lake. When that was approved, the council asked that we meet with the heads of the Department of Natural Resources and the head of the Department of Environmental Quality before sending the letter. If you can imagine, since our November meeting, we've had a series of holidays, and getting us all together has been a little bit difficult. I'm happy to report that we have the meeting with Director Styler scheduled for tomorrow afternoon, and we have the meeting with Director Matheson scheduled for next Wednesday, I believe, 15th. Next Tuesday, sorry. Once those meetings are held and we vet those letters with them, we'll make arrangements to get the letter to the governor. Okay, now let's go to the technical team research report. So, as you know, by statute, the Great Salt Lake technical team is the technical advisor to the Great Salt Lake Advisory Council. Consequently, earlier this year, we started a practice of having some abbreviated or summarized reports from the research that's reported to the technical team. Today, we have two of those. We rely on Laura and Jake to provide those. Laura's report is on the impact of grazing for Phragmites control. Jake's is on Frank Black's work about brine shrimp trace element concentrations. So Laura, do you want to go first?
Sure. I'm going to give you a brief update on Karen Kettering's work that she began back in 2015, looking at the effectiveness of grazing as Phragmites control. It was done by Karen Kettering and Carrie Velbrin. As you may know, grazing is an attractive form of Phragmites control because it's cheap compared to other methods such as herbicide, and there's little, the land managers have to do little to just put the cows out there on the ground and have them eat the frag. And then for a cattle owner, it's a relatively cheap way to feed your cattle. So we wanted to start looking back in 2015 at what the impacts of grazing was and how effective it was. So Karen started looking at three items. First of all, she looked at the decrease in live Phragmites cover in test plots and in grazing plots. She looked at decreases in dead frag cover in litter, and increases in native plant cover after grazing. And the changes that she found in those three study areas are as follows. Changes in Phragmites biomass, there was little change between the grazed and ungrazed plots after the first season. However, there was a pattern of a downward trend in Phragmites in the grazed plots with regard to percent Phragmites cover, stem height, and stem density. With regard to changes in dead Phragmites litter and depth, there was little decrease in grazed plots, and the litter depth also decreased. Litter decreased slightly in the grazed plots. Litter depth decreased slightly over time. The decrease was about 10 centimeters in the grazed plots, and there was an increase in Phragmites cover by 10 centimeters in the control plots where no cows were. And then with regard to native plants, changes in native plant cover, the preliminary results indicated that there were very few native plants before and after grazing, even fewer native plants coming back in the grazed plots. And this may be because of trampling by cows or because the cows are eating them. So they also said they need more time to study how native plants are coming in after grazing occurs on study plots. So there's been a lot more research done on Phragmites in the Great Salt Lake, more looking at revegetation efforts, but then also what's the impact of having the cows out on the Great Salt Lake with regard to phosphorus and nitrogen. And you'll have to stay tuned to the next meeting for information on that. So that's about all I have on Phragmites. Before Jake gets started, I wanted to say that we have a Great Salt Lake Tech Team meeting next Tuesday, January 15th. And if you recall, there was an article in the Tribune a couple weeks ago from Dr. Skiles up at the University of Utah about the impacts of Great Salt Lake dust on snowpack. She will be, Mackenzie will be presenting at the Tech Team meeting next week about that. We'll also have some inland port discussions.
Thank you. Okay. Any questions?
Or where is the study plot?
They're all around the waterfowl management area. So Farmington Bay, Howard Slough, and Harold Crane WMAs.
Another question? Thank you for sharing
that with
us, Laura. Jake, you're on.
Sure. I'm going to summarize a presentation made by Frank Black of Westminster College at the previous Tech Team meeting. So his lab and several collaborators have been working on understanding the effects of lake level, the closure of the causeway, and the deep brine layer mixing and redevelopment on the metal and nutrient dynamics in brine shrimp and brine fly tissue. So they've been tracking the concentrations of metal and nutrients, or of metals and nutrients in those organisms' tissues over this sort of period of change that's included drought and the causeway closure, reopening of the causeway, the changes in the deep brine layer, and looking for the impacts of those changes in the lake on concentrations of either metals or nutrients in brine shrimp and brine flies. So to do that, they've been collecting brine shrimp monthly at six locations, I think in collaboration with DNR, but then also collecting brine flies at one location off Antelope Island, analyzing the tissue concentrations of metals and nutrients, and then comparing those patterns in those concentrations over time and seasonally and spatially. So their main findings have been essentially that the concentrations in both metals and nutrients in tissues vary temporally more than they do spatially, but the seasonal patterns differ by element. So not every element follows the same pattern throughout the seasonal changes, which is kind of interesting. But they also haven't really found have not found a strong influence of all those different changes with the deep brine layer and the opening of the breach on those concentrations in those tissues. So they seem to be sort of at least stable to this point, but maybe we'll see as they keep working on this whether there are future impacts.
Thank you, Jay. Any questions, Jay?
Okay. So as a non-scientist, part of the study was to determine whether Union Pacific's breaching was in keeping with the adaptive management promise they made. Is that fair enough? Are we satisfied with that?
Sort of. I think that's this is sort of a secondary issue to that. Making sure that they're meeting sort of the stipulations of their permit as part of their own monitoring and what they report to us in DNR. But this is kind of looking at what are their effects that are not sort of being accounted for in that process in other parts of the ecosystem.
Any other questions, comments? So we're about to end our brine shrimp cyst harvest season, and it's been a below average harvest. Now I know why Dr. Black has been poaching. Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Next item on the agenda, let me give just a brief introduction. When we adopted our 70, or when we compiled 72 strategies for securing water for Great Salt Lake, a good number of them related to conservation. And then when we came back and prioritized them, two of the top eight related to conservation. One of them was, and I'll summarize this very briefly, increase the efficiency of residential, commercial, institutional, and agricultural systems, i.e. water conservation, which would result in more surface water in streams for delivery to Great Salt Lake. Another one of the top eight was incorporate best management practices for water conservation at the watershed scale into policy-making decisions. So it's an important avenue of water savings, potentially for Great Salt Lake. A number of years ago, the governor adopted a policy of achieving a 25% conservation goal, and I think progress has been made quite well towards that. My understanding is that the Division of Water Resources has contracted with two firms to help develop regional water conservation goals, and we have some folks here to present that they're nearing the end of their contract process, I believe. So let me introduce Steve Jones, who's Vice President and Technical Director of Hanson, Allen & Luce. He has several people in. Hi, Tom. Thank you for being here. You just made us official.
It's 10:30. I guess I got to catch up to see you here.
We just thought it was these added duties being a county commissioner now. He was sworn in yesterday or the day before?
Monday.
So Mr. Jones has more than 19 years of experience working on master planning and design of gravity and pressurized drinking and secondary water systems, storm drain systems, sanitary sewer systems, and the analysis of runoff, water sources, and water rights. He's an expert in extended period hydraulic modeling and water system optimization, and he's helped many water systems identify inefficiencies and develop sustainable solutions. So he didn't give that great introduction to me. I got it off his website. And I'm going to assume it's all true.
Yeah.
So if we could have Steve come up and explain to him the process. Introduce your colleagues and
yeah.
The process.
Let me introduce Keith back of the room from Bowen and Collins. He's been an integral part of this team. And also Dr. Rob Sobey. Also, he's been doing a lot of the work to make this a great project. So I'm not.
Do you want to click?
I could click. Sure. Push the down arrows. So this is actually, we kind of stole this from Eric Millis in something he presents, but the major uses of water in the state of Utah, municipal and industrial, and that's what we're focused on our conservation goals, but also agricultural and environmental. Environmental being obviously the Great Salt Lake, the big elephant in the state. And here's some just kind of preaching to the choir, but the benefits of Great Salt Lake buffers temperature, controls dust, increases snowfall, supports wildlife, supports economy. And interestingly, it was mentioned quite frequently in our online survey for our study. So it's important to the state of Utah, and the public recognizes that and are concerned. So just to review, the Division of Water Resources mission to plan, conserve, develop, and protect Utah's water resources, and so our project purpose was to propose regional boundaries, goals, and practices for M&I water conservation. So not environmental or agricultural, but a lot of the comments and public input, we had to consider those other uses of water because it relates to the M&I. M&I can't take it all, we have a problem. So why regional goals? It was mentioned that we've had a statewide goal and we have made significant progress towards that goal. And you may be aware of, there's been some legislative audits and through the State Water Strategy Report, there was recommendations that regional goals be created to recognize the differences between the different regions of the state. And as part of the legislation action, one of the mandates was to have broad public involvement in this process of creating regional goals. So that was one of our first topics when we started at the very first meeting with the state of how we accomplish the public involvement component. And here's a brief overview of what of how we tried to do that, doing broadly, as broadly as we could with an online survey that went on for a period of time and into open houses where we tried to go to different regions in the state, advertise and then hold open houses to get input from anybody that came to those open houses. And they were fairly well attended and got a lot of input. And then stakeholder interviews where we strategically went to stakeholders where we had interviews and we also have presented the draft report to the stakeholders to get their input first to make sure their concerns were addressed before the report goes out to the public for their review. So just a picture of the public involvement. We didn't have a presentation per se. It was more of an open house where people came as they had time, and then we individually took them around to posters and got feedback and recorded feedback from them through the night. So that was the process of the open houses, and it worked fairly well. Now, to get into some more detail, so obviously we took the input from the public, from the stakeholders. We wanted to make sure that those were considered in creating the goals. We also took a scientific approach. So not all of these are public driven, although we tried to make sure that we included all of those concerns, but some of them were climate and population. If you think, so the goals are per capita goals. And if you think about it, we have a certain population that many people are assuming is coming to the state of water, the state of Utah. If you take that population and divide it by the available water that we think we're going to have, then that's your basic per capita goal that you're going to have to meet to support that many people, or you'll hit a brick wall and something has to change drastically. So the whole concept of the goals is planning. So we understand where we need to get to, and so that we don't hit a brick wall, that we plan really well. We don't dry up the Great Salt Lake. We take in everything into consideration and move forward at an organized manner instead of chaos. And so here's if you can envision these as a little control devices where we throw all this data into the blender and we have these little control devices and we look at what comes out the other end. And these are some main categories that affected the goals. Although we looked at, I don't know, probably hundreds of different parameters. A lot of them got thrown out in the statistics because they didn't make a difference, but some floated to the top and made a difference. And then obviously we tried to make sure we accounted for the considerations that the public wanted to make sure was included. So one of the things we did, we kind of got this idea from Envision Utah, if you remember that, but we tried to make a visual for the open houses of scenarios. So these are not goals. So these are people, this is a home, a typical home. And so we tried to create a visual of what an average water use on a lot for different scenarios. And these are average scenarios, and so again, these are not goals, envisioning that everybody has to get to this or everybody gets to that. These are scenarios to help people visualize the scale of conservation, which applies to this scale that we came up with. So our scenarios are on this side, and it's just part of the scale. It's not a goal. It just creates the scale. And then we have past practices at the top. And then we have current use. So previous to this study, Bowen, Collins, and Hanson and Luce, we did a water audit. We looked at the water use data in the state. And that's the current use. And again, these are all gallons per capita, per capita goals. So 2030.
Steve, you might mention current use refers to 2015, which was the year of data that we had the best information for.
That's right.
And which the state has selected as its new baseline for M&I water conservation.
So that's current use. And as you can see, it's above scenario one, if you remember the grass in the home. And then for 2030, we have so the goals are per capita, like I said, but we also show a percentage, but the percentage was not what generated the goal, if that makes sense. That's just for informational purposes. The goals for all the regions were per capita. And as you see, this is a very common percentage in the regions. And we have a 2030 goal, a 2040 goal, and a 2065. And so like we said before, a lot of times it's the main driver is the population, the number of people are coming to these areas and the amount of water that is available. And then the other factors move it around. But really we have to get to a number to support the number of people that are coming. And then the other factors are more timing. If we're gonna spend money to get people to conserve more, that's a timing issue that we can get the per capita down before we have to, if that makes sense. So this was the concept that we used. You can see the regions up at the top. At the very beginning, we decided that the goals have to be presented by county because people don't know any other region. If you were just to say it, everybody knows what county they live in. However, we had to combine some of the counties because there were not enough data in some of the more rural counties. And so we had to combine them to get enough data to make sense out of the conservation.
Sorry, yeah. So is this just an example for the Bear River region or those counties, and so it'd be different for like Washington County?
That is correct. Okay. This is just an example. So here's the statewide presentation. So there were, it's river council regions. Kind of
River districts. Is what it kind of ended up falling in.
Yeah, and because they're split up by county, and we wanted to keep it in counties. And so these are the regions, although they would be presented by county, but several were combined so that we had good data. This one was split into lower Colorado River North, lower Colorado River South, because these had pretty differential data, and it didn't make sense to combine those. Other than that, this is what they are. The report is supposed to come out early February, and we are on schedule. We've been trying to stay right on schedule. And what we have, several of you have already made comments because you are included in the stakeholders. In the meantime, you can contact me at Hanson Luce, sjoneshansonluce.com, or call our phone number. And at this time, we have a half hour. We want to stick to that, but we have time for discussion and right. Questions.
Why don't you slide back to the slide before?
Okay.
So, questions, comments?
Yeah. Question. One of the issues that's before the legislature this upcoming session will be secondary water metering. And mm-hmm. Did you factor in any of those kinds of more aggressive public policy initiatives that might accomplish these goals more quickly or more deeply?
Absolutely. So with our water use audit and then proceeding into this effort, obviously secondary water metering has, it affects the water use. And we hear a lot of activity in that the arena of somehow getting meters onto the secondary systems. Maybe Keith, you can comment. That this was kind of Keith's arena for this study.
Yeah, and I guess one thing that I would mention is that internal to the goals are some assumptions relative to what practices will need to happen. And in looking at what practices to include in 2030, 2040, 2065, we did an analysis of cost specifically, and those practices that proved to be most cost effective were adopted earlier on, and those that were not as cost effective were postponed to later areas. I bring that up because one of the more cost effective goals was secondary metering. And so secondary metering has been included in the goals for 2030 at full adoption of secondary metering. If you look at, it's pretty obvious right here, if you look at where the largest goal is that Weber River region, and that is predominantly because of the prevalence of secondary water use in that region. And so when we put that practice in and account for that, that becomes potential conservation that can be achieved in that region and is reflected in the numbers. Correspondingly, a lot of the other ones, people ask, well, why, and I'll just anticipate the question, why is Lower Colorado River South region at 8%? That's the St. George area, that's where there's a lot of pressure and for water. And the reality is that many of those conservation activities, the most cost-effective conservation activities, have already been put into effect. They have made a major transition in their landscaping in that region already. So as we look at those measures to try to save water, there's less that can be accomplished with the same measures. And even though in that area we are promoting more aggressive measures, still the potential is smaller and we end up with slightly less conservation down in that area.
Yeah, Steve, I took the survey and we shared it with all of our members, and then I came to one of the open houses.
Yes, as well. Remember you did.
My question is, how did you select the stakeholders that were interviewed? Because when I spoke to you at the open house, you said you would be reaching out to stakeholders like
yes.
me and a colleague, and I never received a request for a stakeholder interview. I'm curious who selected the stakeholders, how were they selected? I'm assuming it was all the water districts, but did you reach out to any groups that have a past in water conservation and maybe creating legislation around water conservation?
Yep, good question. So the very first meeting we had, we actually brainstormed on the board all the stakeholders that we needed to make sure we included. So we had a list, and maybe Rod could talk to this, and then we tried to reach out to all those groups, and then as far as who got the draft, it was the people that were responding back. But maybe I could have Rob speak to how exactly we selected.
So the stakeholders consisted of water district personnel, state legislators, environmental groups. Some in this room have participated, Marcel, I know, for one, among others, and local communities, city councilmen. So we tried to get a very broad base of stakeholders, as well as, I should mention, water conservation managers at particular cities. And so if we hadn't had a chance to talk to them already, we arranged for an in-person interview or a phone call to discuss these things and understand the process, share some of the preliminary results, and then to request feedback on the reports. And so if we didn't get a chance to talk to you, we will certainly do so. I believe you were on the list, and if for whatever reason we didn't get to you right away. Not everybody who was selected to be a stakeholder responded, And so we did select, we did take those responses that came in time to meet our schedule. And I should say overall that the interaction of the public and stakeholders in these interviews has really improved the quality of the study. We've had very good ideas from the people who implement water conservation programs on the ground, boots on the ground, and interact with customers and really are the front line of water conservation in this state. And we appreciate their support and recognize their contributions to improve the study by providing access to certain data and insights and experiences that have been very beneficial for this project.
Yes, our previous report with the water use audit, we were engineers, we worked inside our little box and created the report, but this has been completely different. We're a more collaborative document, and that's what we hope it is when it comes out. Yes, it's a recommendation from a group of engineering firms, but we wanted to make sure that we represented the state as best as we could.
What will be the length of the comment period?
So
it'll be open for public comment for about 3 weeks, maybe 4 weeks, I believe.
How long is the draft report? How many pages?
It's approximately 100 pages.
Oh, I'm a big believer you need one day for every page. You mentioned the conservation practices, you plug them in based upon cost efficiency. Does your draft identify which of those practices are plugged in where, so that there'd be comments on that evaluation?
Yes, and Keith can talk to this. I'll make a comment here. Cost is, yes, the report does have that information, and cost is just one of the factors we consider. Also, what is the yield of that conservation practice? What is the public acceptability for those kinds of activities, and so on? Keith, just want to elaborate?
Yeah, I think in the draft, we do include percentages of acceptance of different practices, and that's all included in the draft, so you'll have the opportunity to look at that. The one thing I would note that I would add is, in one of the open houses, in Ridgefield, somebody came in and said, well, this is really easy. You just identify the cost of conservation practice, the cost of the next source, and then anything that's less than the cost of the next source, you do, and anything that's more, you don't do. And you know, from an engineering standpoint, I thought, oh, that makes a little bit of sense. But as we talked more to people, what we found is that you can't do strictly a cost-based looking at today, because water is a fixed resource. Even if the next source has a certain cost, once you develop that, the next source may be significantly more, and now you've lost the opportunity for some of that conservation. So we actually do consider cost and acceptance, but we've actually included activities that maybe don't make sense strictly from an economic standpoint relative to the next source, but makes sense economically from a long-term perspective. And that's where this has been a little bit difficult, is trying to weigh all those issues and community values and try to include those that make sense from the long term, not necessarily just the economic analysis this point.
Right. A lot of what we did was a balance. Can't go all the way this way, can't go all the way this way. And really what we're trying to do is predict the future. What will it really be? So it's more just as much a projection as a goal.
Dave?
So just curious, in terms of next steps, once these goals are adopted, are they going to be enforced by the Division of Water Resources or by municipalities or state or counties? What do these goals mean?
Well, they're goals. You know, we don't have an enforcement component, but you know, we've got to get the water users, we've got to get the citizens, we've got to get everybody on board with these as we go forward. So the answer is no. If you don't get to X number of percent, we're not going to come in and find you. We're going to hope, you know, the entities will get there. And I think that's why the way the model is set up.
Yeah.
That these were actual processes and water conservation minded going forward. So.
Yeah, and a lot of the water districts or cities are smaller than these regions, and so we would hope that they would take our tools that we've created and then customize it to their own area.
Now, Representative Hawks might want to take that on as a legislative challenge.
Thank you.
We had Tom.
We have room over here. If you've got room for more.
Go ahead.
I was wondering if in your report you break down these goals in terms of residential versus industrial. If you look at those numbers, you know, and show people's houses and plots, that would be a huge goal. And, you know, the consumptive use between residential and industrial is going to
factor. And so we did look at national, you guys could chime in, we did look at national studies with industrial, and industrial have their own trends that they actually get they conserve water because of costs. It's about money. And so they have a certain, and then they turn around and apply that to profit. And so we took that and included that in. And so it was different than the residential components.
But I was going to say, though, these goals are overall goals that take into account all residential, industrial, commercial.
Right.
It doesn't say how you're going to get that. At the end of the day, we understand that the boots on the ground, the individual cities are going to have to say, okay, how can we get there? A Salt Lake City might say, well, we have this big industrial and commercial component, we need to focus there. Whereas more of a commuter community might focus more on the residential side.
And this is also why, like, Sevier River area has such a high number. It's not because the people use a lot of water, it's because there's a small amount of people and more industrial and other uses.
Let's go to Tom, and then we have one over here. And Tom, you're next.
So, one of my questions, can you go back to like your second or third slide? We're, mm-hmm. The Great Salt Lake Advisory, and you had a list of things that, relative to, there you go. So, when you conserve water with the relationship between DWRE and water rights, and maybe talk and speak to this, or otherwise, in terms of this is looking at how to develop the resources that we have to meet the needs in the state. The appropriation of water, that's under water rights, mm-hmm. and under Title 7338, there's a clause that says, we're not going to appropriate water if it impacts the natural environment. You identify here, though, just putting that aside, the lake effect. So I was doing some back of napkin numbers. If I've heard 3%, 8% lake effect snow, and that becomes part of, as I view that, part of the primary water rights in Davis, Salt Lake, and Utah County, you could be seeing a, $250,000 acre foot impact if the lake is not there. Right,
right, exactly.
And that becomes an impact on, this hasn't been tried, but it's, in my career in water rights, any impact usually ends up in litigation, and you say you can't impact a prior water right holder. So further decreases in the lake, in my mind, can become a direct impact on prior water right holders, some of the most senior in the state.
Yeah.
And so the conserved water doesn't go to the environment, it goes to the next appropriator. So I think you heard Don mention that one of the discussions we've had is a conversation with Mr. Styler and Mr. Matheson and Governor, like, let's pick a number. What do we plug in, or did you plug in this plan? You're planning for cities and growth and population. What's the allocation for the Great Salt Lake? Growth threshold. We have a Great Salt Lake Management Plan that says, when the lake gets at certain levels, it starts impacting habitat, the environment. We've got air quality, so that's public health. What I haven't seen is actual impact to water rights.
Right.
If the lake goes down, a prior water right holder now is being impacted by another diversion.
Yep.
And I think those are some questions that really need to be answered so that we end up in our little glass bowl. We've appropriated water and actually.
Yep.
A 200,000 acre foot withdrawal actually has a 500,000 acre foot impact, and just kind of a cascade spiral.
And it's complicated. As
so, what did you choose for this plan, or is there, how do you address that?
I don't believe we chose a value.
Well, if you think about conservation, when you change practices,
that water just goes to more people.
Yeah, so
I work for municipality. We try to conserve so we can have more people.
So if there's less waste, then there may be less water getting to the
So that's my question. Is this plan to say, does conservation allow for more people, or does conservation allow for preservation of a minimum flow in the lake, or
not? The cool part is we're going to put that back on U-Cities, right? Because it's your water and your water right, and these are the conservation goals that you'll have in your city, and it'll be happening.
And that's the point of this. There's got to be a balance.
Is there a recommendation and study in terms of the technical side of it? One of the goals of this group is, as Don mentioned, there's a list of things to conserve water. That wasn't to conserve water to have more people in the city. It's so that there's more water to the lake. What threshold or number or quantity of water is being deemed to be sent to the lake in those scenarios?
Yeah,
was that? I haven't seen that ever addressed. So that's. I know I might be asking you where it has to be.
I don't think it was addressed in this report.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
That's what I was going to say. I don't think it's really. It was not contemplated as part of this scope to figure out where that water goes. To me, that's more kind of state water plan type.
But the concept, this concept will be talked about in the report. So even though there's not. It needs further discussion and study.
Yeah.
We recognize that needs to happen, but that wasn't necessarily in our scope of work, if that makes sense.
Right. Last question. When will the draft be published for comment? You said early February. Can you give us a date?
Don't we have a date? February.
Steve's got his deadline right now.
January 21st. I think that may be delayed after some feedback from further stakeholders. And so that's why we say early February as an availability for this report.
Hey, Tom. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Grab the sign and sheet.
Oh, keep it going.
Thank you, Tom. Once again, we have a policy here that you're not allowed to leave the room until you've signed the roll. So in case of fire, you should want to sign it sooner rather than later.
I'd just like to pass out, so this ties into Tom's comments, the editorial that appeared on December 30th, the Salt Lake Tribune. It's all about looking at the Great Salt Lake and trying to address water levels. And this is not just a letter to the editor, this is the whole newspaper's editorial board, and many of you have seen this. It cites the economic value of over $1 billion, which is a number that came out of GSLAC reports, calls the lake the black backbone of our culture, and urges planners to think differently about the Great Salt Lake. So I think that's a validation of all the work we've done here. I just want everybody to know about in this computer age, not everybody sees different our major newspapers. This what might have been better, as Representative Hawks could tell us, if it was in the Deseret News, but it's still pretty impressive.
Thank you for sharing that. I will tell you that I've chatted with Mackenzie Stiles about presenting Darby, which she was not available for this meeting nor for the March meeting, now the State on Board meeting. So we'll talk about that in a minute. Now that we have a quorum, I'd like to go back and do a little formal business. We need to formally approve the agenda for the meeting. I'd entertain a motion to do so.
Tom,
thank you. Is there a second?
Senator.
Okay, thank you, Jeff. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Any abstentions? Need to approve the meeting notes of November 14. They were sent out. They received no revisions or corrections. So I'd entertain a motion to approve the meeting notes as you received them.
So moved.
Thank you, Randy. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, Tom. Any debate or discussion? All in favor say aye. Any opposed,
aye.
Nay.
Aye.
Any abstentions? I don't mean to go too quickly here.
I didn't get a copy now, folks.
Okay. We have an abstention. Okay, and the next item, I skipped over the annual report of the Great Salt Lake Advisory Council. We are statutorily required to provide an annual report to the legislature, specifically to the Natural Resources Appropriations Committee. Our first report was issued the year after we were formed in 2011. We've issued 8 such reports through 2018. Here's what it looks like. We brought them and distributed to you every year. our process is I'm responsible for putting texts together, and then Nature Conservancy has graciously footed the expense and the task of having a graphic designer laid out. I think they do a terrific job. So we sent to you an advance text. We received a couple of comments. The text has followed the same format every year, where we draw attention to the beauties of the Great Salt Lake on the cover, and then on the inside, we outline the statutory duties and make a list of how we've responded to those statutory duties. Then we have a page three, that talks about specific activities throughout the year. There's a paragraph on each one of principal activities, and then the back page summarizes our meeting topics. I'm happy to receive any further comments or proposed revisions, but what I really need is a motion to approve the publication of the annual report.
So moved.
Thank you, David. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Thank you, Tom. Any debate, discussion, questions, criticisms, comments, or...
Just note that next year will be our 10th anniversary, so we might consider a special publication next year. Maybe.
Well, I think that's a great idea. Let's talk about it sooner rather than later and see what we can come up with. 10 years. I don't mean to move too quickly here. If you want to talk about it, I'm happy to talk about it. We have a motion and a second. Any debate or discussion? Say to authorize report and publication. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Any abstentions? It's unanimous. Okay. Don't let it go, I gotta sign in.
Oh.
Okay, the next item on the agenda. And we're hanging in there on the time frame. As you know, the Utah State Legislature convenes on January 28th and will be in session until March 14th. At our last meeting, when we were considering adoption of a policy letter to the governor, it was suggested that we request a resolution on the same topic of need to prevent further decline in Great Salt Lake, a legislative resolution. And I want to acknowledge Marcel Schufer and Marcel. She took it upon herself to prepare a draft, and we've done some collaboration on that. The draft was sent to you. I apologize, it was only sent a couple of days ago. It took some effort to get it done, and unfortunately we have some computer glitches too. But you have received a copy of a resolution. Again, the objective of the resolution was to basically pair up the letter to the governor. And there's some discussion as whether this should be a joint resolution of the legislature or a current resolution involving the governor as well. But in essence, the front, the first three fours make whereas conclusions that in my mind are quite irrefutable, but I'm happy to have you try to refute them, about the importance of the Great Salt Lake and the wetlands and the economic contributions and the impacts of the drying lake. And then the be resolved clauses are basically that the legislature and governor of the state of Utah recognize the importance of ensuring adequate flows to the Great Salt Lake, its wetlands, and maintain a healthy and sustainable lake system. Be resolved that the legislature and the governor recognize there's a need for a policy that supports effective allocation and administration of water flow to Great Salt Lake to maintain or increase lake levels while balancing economic, social, and environmental needs. Be resolved that the governor encourages the departments of natural resource and environmental quality through their relevant divisions, along with the advisory council, to jointly and collaboratively engage with a wide range of stakeholders to develop recommendations for policy and other solutions to ensure adequate water flows to Great Salt Lake. It resolved the legislature and governor encourage presentations of findings, conclusions, and recommendations to accomplish those purposes. And then lastly, the most controversial, that a copy be sent to these entities. So it's very straightforward. It's absolutely, I think, 100% consistent with the letter to the governor that was approved. I think there's possibility of it being quite well received on the Hill. And again, it is a resolution, so it's not binding in the action that it dictates. It's just, if I were to quote what Todd Adams said about the report, we just had a report, the conservation report, these are goals, and we've got to get people to understand them and incorporate them. And from this standpoint, give those many people within the state agencies who are so supportive of these goals, give them some cover to move forward and try and find ways to implement them and balance maybe historical practices with the needs of defining Great Salt Lake. So my recommendation is that we approve the resolution and let us see if we can get its acceptance at the legislature. I'll open it up to questions, criticisms, comments, revisions, whatever.
My observation is it pretty succinctly expresses what we talked about in previous meetings. I think it's about the right tool, it's about the right length. I think you're right, you'll find support.
Ditto Tom's comments.
Ditto. Okay. Any other counselors want to comment? And we'll go ahead, Todd.
I got a couple questions on just some wording. I really like what it's doing, but just some wording that kind of gets in my craw a little bit. You got the whereas on the second page, the second one, it says water levels in it. But we talked about a downward trend having lost approximately 48% of its volume over the last 150 years, leaving large areas of exposed lake bed. Just, well, as I look at the Great Salt Lake hydrograph, if you start about when the pioneers came about an elevation here versus here, is that truly what we're talking about in a downward trend? I'm not sure that's exactly what it's stating, because I don't see that downward trend. I see a trend that's downward, but is it truly 48%, or is that 48% from whatever point? Just a question.
What number did you plug in, Todd?
I don't know what number. I don't know what number I plug in there. I'm just trying to define how that was stated.
He asked me to try to take a stab at rewording it, and I didn't understand that we were going to be discussing it here. So. All right, it's back in the office.
And then the third whereas on that page, it says the current trajectory suggests. I don't know what the current trajectory is. That the last year, 5 years, 10 years, 150 years, like we just stated? What is current trajectory?
So to avoid getting caught in the thick of thin things, if you read that whereas, it basically says that the lake level of the Great Salt Lake is declining over time. You object to that?
I don't object to that. I just don't know what
I think there's consensus about that conclusion.
Sure.
I've not had a substantive conversation with a single human being in the last 3 or 4 years who has disagreed with that conclusion. And so I think, you know, when you're trying to spur action, you maybe take 2 points in time, because no matter what 2 points you take, you can be accused of being arbitrary.
Absolutely.
You take 2 points in time to try to emphasize the message you're sharing. And I could take a point in time where it shows that the lake actually increased in elevation from one year to the next.
Sure.
But that's really not intellectually honest to do that. So I get your point. I'm sorry it sticks in your craw. I'm not trying to do that.
No, I just want maybe a better definition or a better verbiage there to help that.
Yeah.
You can say the last 30 years and be in that
sure,
range.
Sure, and
certainly.
Sure.
Maybe more.
Or from 1960 to present, or whatever date you define it as.
Well, 1960 was near the historic level. So
well, okay, take it from 84 to present. I don't know.
87. The last 30 years.
Don.
Yeah, just another. Yeah, go ahead, Marcel.
No, I just was going to say that information, well, James may be questioning whether it's worded exactly right. It came out of the paper that Wayne Wirtzwa and then
sure,
wrote.
Sure.
And so if Craig has some other ideas about where the numbers are, that's
fine. I just, that's where that came from, if anybody has a question.
Maybe on that note, I'm just curious. So on that second paragraph that Todd was mentioning, it says 48% of the volume. I thought I'd seen numbers where it's the diversion of water that, absent our diversions, we can divert in 48% on an annualized basis, you know, which is real.
It's not the volume of the lake, but it's the volume of the diversion.
Something like that. Right, the inflows.
So I was saying inflow maybe instead of volume.
Sorry, I don't. No. Just to test the depth of your craw. I don't mean to make light of it. I appreciate and respect your position here, Todd. If I were to say, whereas water levels at Great Salt Lake and its wetlands can fluctuate naturally, however, the lake is currently on a sustained downward trend, having lost significant volume, leaving large areas of lake. Of exposed lake bed, is that sticking your craw?
No, that's a lot better.
I'm not conceding the number, I'm just looking to.
I think we have at least on your office how much the natural inflow and how much the diverted upstream.
Right.
And I think it's close to 48% of.
Or you can talk about, the 48% of the inflow or what have you. So
but the purpose of this resolution is not to state numerical facts, it's to provide the foundation for substantive policy action that needs to be taken, and I know of no one who disagrees with that.
But I'm not disagreeing with that.
So
maybe an amendment to the resolution, to the proposal, is to delegate to you, Don, the final editorial powers to work out these finer points rather than.
Well, I think some people on one end of the spectrum would like to fight tooth and nail to keep the 48% in there. For me, I'm a more practical person. I want to get the policy adopted. So I'm comfortable with the language taking the 48% out and replacing it with significant. And letting the conclusion be that the large areas of what exposed lake bed, et cetera, and let people pick their number. It doesn't matter what the number is. The trend, we know what the trend is, and we know the policy action needs to be taken. So I appreciate delegating it to me, but I'd just as soon lay on the table how I would solve that. You can tell me whether or not that's too.
Sorry, can I make a motion then? Because I feel strongly about the 48, having a number. Is that significant? It would be 5%, 8%, 48%, half the flow to the lake, and then we compare it to the RLC and the others, that's where the trend is. We're following that path. And so my motion would be that let's verify it's factually correct, it's tied to inflow or something that Todd and his department say, that's not inaccurate. But to my mind, it spurs that attention and dialogue at the legislative level that is needed. The second part of this with Representative Hawks here, I guess, if you see anything that you see being more receptive or less receptive, I'm keen to your comments or questions on this before we do a final, push it out of this group.
Can we hold your motion until we get through the whole thing and do an omnibus motion here and to talk about any other comments about that issue? Any other issues or comments or concerns?
Wow. Just regarding this or in general?
Nice catch.
Is it just the word
volume? I deserve it.
Is it just the word volume?
I'm just not sure what the volume means. Is it the volume of the Great Salt Lake? I don't think it's 48% of the volume of the Great Salt Lake.
It might have in the
important
current flows,
isn't it?
Well, one of the, in the white paper right now, says that current lake elevation is 48% of the lake bed is exposed compared to when the lake is at 4207.
It referred originally to area, and it's not necessarily a point in history to another point today, and that, I don't know, there's a few complications in there. I'm not really sure how to word that, but 48% is about what it came out to be.
Well, Tom has an idea in mind how to word it, so let's see what he says.
It's not even that's what
okay. I'll take silence.
I've got one recommendation on your last line.
you have mentioned bordering the Great Salt Lake. I'd recommend you include the counties within the Great Salt Lake watershed. I think that's more appropriate, acceptable.
So you're saying all municipalities and council counties bordering and in the watershed of Great Salt Lake.
They're bordering
in the watershed of Great Salt Lake. How do council members feel about that?
Yeah.
Good. Okay. Anything else? Okay, Tom, why don't you tell us what you want to do before you make your motion?
Well, I
went with the second whereas on the second page.
Right. I would propose that it remains with the change that it's, one, we need to factually verify that it's factually correct, but I recall seeing that 40% of the annual inflow into the lake has been diverted otherwise, which has an effect. I mean, I think Todd's point, the area of the lake's going to be different. There's a lot of other factors that affect that as opposed to the inflow, which then that talks to how we plan for and manage the water that flows to the lake. Maybe I'm splitting hairs, but I think a number like 48% speaks a lot louder than significantly gets lost in the noise.
And you think it's 48% of the annual inflow is an accurate statement?
I'm looking at the UGS chart here, volume-wise, from 4212, where it was 30 years ago, to now, you've lost 90% of your volume from the high point to now.
So then, therefore, this is wrong.
Well, could be worse. Look, depends on the interval you're
selecting. Let me rephrase my proposal. I would like it to be a matter of the diverted flow of the annual average flow that goes to the lake. DWRE, I think you have that. How much is diverted above versus how much goes into the lake. That's an average annual. We could talk all day and night about lake levels, just picking years like you mentioned, but what's real is we've been developing diverting water that would otherwise have gone to the lake. I think it's close to 48% to verify that, you know, get a number and it's inflow. And I wanted to defer to the representative on
Tim?
Well, it is important, it does not state anything that's inaccurate that somebody can use to attack it. But Candace had the actual language,
so,
and it does
I,
say volume and it does say exposed volume.
So in the conclusion of the white paper,
This is Wordspot's white paper.
It says, consumptive uses, however, have reduced the lake level by 11 feet, decreased its volume by 48%, increased lake salinity, and exposed approximately 50% of the lake bed. So
I'm amending my proposal to keep it as is.
Well, so, and if we can, we don't necessarily have to reference the white paper, but if we can all know that those numbers came from the white paper.
Well, I'm back to Tom's original or Dave's motion, authorizing a couple of us to make a decision after checking the facts. Who wants to be the couple to make that decision?
And I'll second Dave's motion that the final editorial fact correction applies with you, Don.
Yep, I'll point Tom to sort it out.
Tom, Todd, and then Don.
Okay, so that's one motion.
And then we have the changes on the
Within
the watershed.
Do you want to put those together in one motion and authorizing that?
I have one other one I wanted to add in on the second whereas, $1.3 billion, I'd like to add in annually. $1.2 billion annually from brine shrimp harvesting, mineral extraction, etc.
Good catch.
And then I did not see, and I'm very, gaining a better understanding of the health
air quality impacts of the drive like that. I didn't see anything talk about air quality, but maybe it was in there.
I think we talked about health.
So we're gonna add in, you know, health and air quality.
Which also poses a threat to each other's economy, public health, welfare, environmental.
And air quality. And we're putting, I think, $100 million, I think, into air quality this year. I don't know why. For the last year.
So after an environmental resources with the health care quality? Is that right? So public health and welfare, environmental resources, air quality, and the ability to provide water to meet you. Is that where we're?
That would be my motion.
Okay. Anything else? Comfortable with our process to address that issue, Todd?
Yeah, I think that has it. We'll work with Todd to help.
All right, thank you. Okay, we have a motion by Tom, a second by I can't remember.
Second.
I now remember. It was Dave. Any further debate or discussion? And the motion is with to make the corrections and changes and then to propose the resolution to the upcoming session of the legislature. Let's add in there that we also will take it to our meetings with Mike Styler and Alan Matheson and give them a courtesy view as well.
Now, on the municipal side, we'll usually go out and reach out to the legislators and find a sponsor. What is, now we have the agency can't propose things. How do we do that here?
We've had some conversations. We think it's eminently likely that there are multiple sponsors possible, and so if you let us move forward, and we'll work together on that.
Okay. Do you need a motion or anything like that to make that
happen?
That was part of the motion.
I think it's to move the bill forward, the resolution forward, encompasses finance sponsors, co-sponsors, etc.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, we have a motion, a second, incorporating some revisions and a process to resolve one revision. Any further debate, discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Any abstentions? Unanimous, thank you. Marcel, thank you for your work on that, your promise for additional support and support. Okay, next. Public comment. We always provide a
quick boost to get skipped to Tim.
Oh, I skipped Tim. Oh,
I want to do that.
Well, let me take So, as I mentioned, the legislative session begins on January 28th. We talked about the resolution we want to move forward. I thought it would be useful to ask Representative Hawks if he had comment on a few pieces of legislation he's anticipating seeing that would relate to the Great Salt Lake. And then after that, I'd like to do a quick run around the room and see if, I don't want to have a long discussion about it, but I'd like you to identify bills that you think that you're working on or that might impact Great Salt Lake, just so we're all aware of what's going on. Go ahead, Tim.
Thanks, John. Good morning, everybody. I wanted to ask a question just as a segue from the last discussion on municipal supply, which is if we double our population, we add 3 million people, and they all go into apartment buildings, what does that do to the water supply for Great Salt Lake? Anybody know? Add 3 million people, you put them all in apartment buildings, what does it do to water supply to Great Salt Lake?
So for Sandy City, we're actually looking at where our densification, going to apartments, we don't need more demand.
This is a trick question.
It is a trick question. One of the things when we think about municipal supply, and the only reason I ask this question is it is all about your outdoor use. It's not really about indoor use. Indoor use is water in, water out, generally speaking. You know, there's some differences there, and there's water quality implications, but in terms of just water supply, if we took all those 3 million people and we just put them in apartments, it probably wouldn't affect lake flows all. If, on the other hand, we build half-acre lots and we push them out into western Utah County, where there's currently no, basically it's just sagebrush step, we put all of them there, huge implications for the Great Salt Lake, because that's all new outside consumption, which is what we really want to focus on, is that outside consumption. Indoor water, indoor savings is great, but it's the outdoor stuff that we really want to focus on. And hence, you notice those little modules they were presenting, it's all about how you manage your water outside, not inside. So with that in mind, I just want to mention three things, and I'm just going to highlight these for you. If you have questions about it, you can come to me, because it's not really time to go into them in any great detail. But the first is a bill sponsored by Senator Jake Andrade on secondary metering. Now, everybody knows, when you've been in water, that secondary metering is a game changer. You saw the data up there that suggests that's how you can make the deepest cuts, the biggest savings. There is nothing, just as far as the lake goes, there's nothing out there that approaches the ability of secondary metering to generate a big new block of water. Now, we can debate where that block of water goes, but the fact is, if we could wave a magic wand today and put everybody on secondary metering, very good likelihood that a very large block of water that isn't going to the lake today would go to the lake. So secondary is important. So why don't we have it? Simple answer, cost. It's very, very expensive. About eight, I think we've had the presentation from Darren Hess of Weber Basin. Average cost maybe $1,800 a hookup. Multiply that by 100,000 hookups in Davis and Weber County. I'm not even talking about Cache County. You know, it's hundreds of millions of dollars in cost to get it done. So Senator Andrade sort of aired this bill last session, decided not to move it. He's in earnest about moving it this session. I will be the House sponsor for that bill. And the biggest single challenge is cost. So when you're asking these small water providers, whether it's Benchland here in Farmington or Dual Creek down in Centerville, and we're asking them to undertake expenses that exceed by order of magnitude their annual budget. They, of course, are resistant to that. In many cases, they have no incentive to do it. It's only cost and headache for them. They have their water supply contracts, they're built out, and so they really, really don't want to do it. So the bill basically does one thing, is it does a 10-year runway. It basically says, look, you'll have all your hookups metered by 2030. All new construction will have a secondary meter in the state. I think it's 2030, might be 2029.
It's
2030.
It's Senate Bill 52.
Senate Bill 52, if you want to take a look at it. But again, by 2030, you're going to have it in place. And then the important piece of this is, how do you fund it? And it tries to do so with a small mix of grants, a little bit of grant money, but mostly it's low interest loans. And so the big part of this bill is actually coupled with an appropriations request where we're going to legislature and saying we need $10 million a year forever, not forever, but for a long time, to create a pool of money where people can borrow, they can finance these basically, maybe work with the big water districts to finance it, but to get it done. It needs to be done. Everybody knows it needs to be done. And the question is just, how do you pay for it? So that bill is coming. It's in discussion. There's some resistance there. I think there'll be some exempting of rural counties, because it's just really hard to get them to do that. They really don't, from a water supply standpoint, it's kind of a different animal. So stay tuned on that bill. Two resolutions I wanted to mention. The first is Senator Iwamoto is running a resolution on water banking. He had a big idea out there in water conservation. Is water banking, which is just kind of bringing market-based principles to bear when it comes to water, making it more efficient so that water can move to meet a variety of needs quickly and efficiently, rather than big dislocations right now, which is kind of buy and dry. You know, if you're an agricultural producer and you're under pressure, your option is either to hang on to every last drop or sell out. And we'd like to provide agricultural users in particular with a range of options. And the ability to meet short-term needs. Long-term, a water bank is probably going to be a part of the solution for Great Salt Lake water supply. You have to somehow be able to generate conservation in point A and then deliver it down to the lake. That is, by definition, a water bank. Now, what that actually looks like is enormously complicated and difficult, and a lot of things have to happen for that to occur. But the concept of water banking is very much in currency. Senator Iwamoto ran a bill, I think, last session, 2 years ago, on in-stream flow, when she's, that bill failed, but they sort of pulled it back into a resolution to study the issue. As she pulled the stakeholder groups together to study that issue, they said, let's talk about water banking. That's what we're interested in. In-stream flow has a, is a component of water banking. And so that group's really sort of got a lot of the stakeholders together. They're talking about the issue. This year, there's two pieces. One is a resolution saying, hey, instead of a resolution on in-stream flow, it's a resolution that's explicit about water banking. It's coupled with a request for $400,000. The $400,000 will be used as a cost share in trying to apply to a Bureau of Recreation Water Smart Grant, I believe, that will be due next July. And the idea is to generate $800,000 to $1 million to really do pilot programs to test water banking, very likely in Cache Valley and in the Provo River system. So the, again, the resolution this year is really just to refocus that effort to be an education opportunity for legislators so they know what's coming. The last thing I'd mention is that newly elected incoming Representative Casey Snyder will be running a bill. It's a resolution that will rescind the approval of the Class 5 permit on Promontory Point. And the argument there is pretty simple. That was brought to the legislature as kind of a crisis. You've got to bless this. It's important for economic development in Box Elder County. We've got to get it done now. It wasn't that urgent, and that application has been pulled. So there is no pending application right now at the state for a Class 5. So the legislature's out ahead of itself. And the idea is simply, listen, come back when you've got an active proposal and we can talk about it. So Representative Snyder will be running that resolution. So those are three. The last thing I just say is we never know as legislators exactly what we're going to get until a legislator makes the bill public. All kinds of things can be back there in the background and none of us know what they are. It's confidential between them and the drafting attorney until they make it public. So stay tuned, we may see more.
Thank you. Do you have any questions? Todd? Yeah,
just to follow up, the governor's budget did have $20 million for the grant money in potentially an Andrews bill. So just there is some support on the executive side. So.
Great. Thanks for asking for that.
I think the Senate is our challenge, to be honest.
Yeah, it is. It will be.
Other questions? Let's quickly jump around the room.
$1,800 per house? Is that what you said? How did that? I mean, in my simple mind, you and I are on the same system, Dual Creek, and you go out and you just cut the pipe, put a meter on, and you're done. And then you pay for a meter reader. Does that meter cost $1,800?
No, it costs a couple hundred bucks. You and I are the cheap part of the equation because our meters are up front.
Yeah.
The problem is in a lot of these systems, they install them in the backyard, so you got to go under around trampolines and fences and all kinds of stuff.
Big holes.
And that's where the cost is. It's all in the labor.
The new construction's less like $800.
It's 400.
Less than that, yeah.
It's about 400. It's about 1,100 to the front of your lot, and it's about 2,000 to the back of your lot.
So we're averaging costs there to get that 800.
Thank you.
We had any other questions of Tim? Anyone else want to share with us their legislative agenda they're pushing regarding and relating to the Great Salt Lake? Okay.
So we support all three of these, as Tim described. We're also always interested in Fine Commons budget and making sure that Fire Parks and State Lands is well funded. And there's also been a matter of staffing for this council, and that's of interest as well.
Others?
I'll add it. I know there were three bills that were discussed through, Skyler initiated a task force group that got together, and I think there's going to be three bills coming out of that. The short story of that is there's been a lot of vetting of the information, and at least from our municipality standpoint, it's a good thing. One of them is extraterritorial jurisdiction, and that one looks to keep some of the ability of the city to protect its water supply, kind of further clarifies what that would be and doesn't ameliorates or addresses some of the concern from upper watersheds that a city downstream might be really egregious and whatnot. The other ones, Tim, help me with that. I can bring it down.
You said extraterritorial.
It's extraterritorial, which is, there's a there will be a constitutional amendment tied with potential legislation.
It's also about surplus water.
And then surplus water contracts, that one, there had been some misunderstanding of what that is. A city, as it's developing and appropriating water rights, cannot hoard water. There's a belief that cities were hoarding water and then selling that to other cities. A city like Sandy or Salt Lake, or most cities do this, they'll appropriate a water amount of water. When they go run the pipe 5 miles away to that source, there might be Farmer Joe and someone else wants water. The only way for them to provide that water is to sell that surplus. So it's not a waste of water, and it's not a hoarding per se. Most cities in the state of Utah have some sort of sale outside their city limits, and that allows us to better manage those water supplies and to stretch those. So you'll see the bill, as I believe Representative Coleman is pushing that through. One of the elements is that it says that if I serve a customer outside Sandy City, I can't go treat them differently. If I do, it has to be based on some sort of, because they're high up on the hill and I have to pay an extra dollar per gallon to get it to them. I can't just say you're not in the city and cut you off.
Not so directly related to Great Salt Lake, it is water.
No, I guess, and so to close that on these bills, they've got the support of municipalities that participate in the league process, and I think I'll leave it at that.
Todd, and then I want to make a comment.
There's one other that we're still working on. Dave, you and I are chairing a committee together on regional water councils, watershed councils. We're working with Representative Cox potentially to, if we can get that to a ready to go. But we will have a couple more meetings before we have that.
So I want to make, go ahead.
I hope, that's it, sorry.
I want to state an assumption that, and then give you the opportunity to cut my legs out from under on that assumption. When we prioritized our water strategy, the 72 items, the issues we've been talking about, water banking, secondary metering, water councils, all three of them were in our top 10 priorities. So I'm assuming that there's nothing prohibiting me, not from necessarily endorsing specific legislation, but endorsing generally legislation in support of those objectives. Sometimes in specific legislation you get language or add-ons or things that make, you know, people heartburn. But I'm assuming you have no problem with the advisory council endorsing the idea of secondary metering, water banking. What was the third one?
Councils.
No, councils, water councils. Anything else that's in our top for priorities? Tell me if I'm wrong. Don't need a motion, I don't think.
Other than funding to DNR and DEQ for the Great Salt Lake models and studies.
And staffing was a position we adopted several years ago, so yeah. That's more specific. Okay, hearing no objection, I'll assume I have that freedom. We got to wrap up here quickly. Other legislation?
Just as it relates to the Legacy Nature Preserve, there's going to be a bill entered by Todd Weiler that would continue the truck ban on Legacy Parkway. Okay. And I was going to do that under public comments so I can get more information on that.
Other comments on legislation? No surprises.
Yes. Division of Forestry, Fire, and State Lands. We're not asking for any legislation. We have the support within the governor's budget to make a request for $500,000 ongoing from our restricted account for brack mining treatments.
Yes, and we've endorsed that in the past and been involved and continue to be supportive.
Yeah. It's been an annual request up to this point. That's all the support we've gotten, but it's finally to the point of an ongoing request, which is good.
Right.
Don, briefly on that, to Director Cogg's question, and I think I'm preaching to the choir here. One of the things to watch in the natural resources appropriation is the rating of that fund for issues that are not directly related to sovereign lands, and it will take money away from Great Salt Lake. So we always just have to watch that, because a lot of legislators see that as a cash cow, for lack of a better word.
Oh, I have that to our list. I was trying to cover it up with a general statement. I'm glad the representative.
Great, thank you, Dave. Okay, well, we're at time, but we have two more items that we have to cover, so I'd ask at least council members to stay with us for a couple of minutes. The first one is public comment period. We always provide an opportunity. I'd like an idea of how many people would like to comment so I can allocate the time. One, two, three. Okay, we'll take them in that order. Can you each take no more than 2 minutes?
Sure.
Okay. You were first?
Sure. Just regarding something the council has discussed numerous times over the past year or two, the Bear River Development Project. I'm not sure if everyone is aware that last month the Board of Water Resources approved $5 million for right-of-way and property acquisition for the pipeline. And then additionally, I'm sure Marisa could tell you more about this, there's a study coming out sometime early this next year or spring, we've been told, regarding the planning, and I'm assuming maybe dam sites chosen for the project. So despite what we've heard in this committee and in the media a lot over the last year, that the project isn't moving forward, that it's being pushed back, in several ways, it's also being advanced currently.
Yes, there's going to be a public community meeting at Foxborough Elementary School next Wednesday, the 16th at 7 p.m. with Todd Weiler on the panel, along with other representatives and local residents, to continue the truck ban on Legacy and keeping it a parkway. And I think what's most relevant probably to this group is when the legislature back in 2005 passed a limitation of trucks on Legacy Parkway. It said the legislature finds and declares that the limitation of trucks being operated on Legacy Parkway is due to the unique location of the Legacy Parkway, which is adjacent to the Legacy Nature Preserve. And of course, nothing has changed in that relationship. So that's where the residents have gotten organized and are working with their local officials, mayors, city councils, and representatives to continue the truck ban to keep it a parkway.
Thank you for sharing that with us.
And real quick, I am the conference chair of the AWRA National Conference this November, so American Water Resource Association, and we are planning on having a saline lakes track. We'll have a call for abstracts come out at the beginning of March, and so I just wanted all of you to know about it and to submit an abstract and come to the conference. So it's a national organization that we're hosting here in Salt Lake.
What's the date of the conference?
November 4th through the 8th, if I remember correctly, but I can also get you those dates.
It's very first week.
First week of November.
Okay.
Sorry.
Well, the organization was?
American Water Resource Association.
National Conference, and Candace and I work on the committee for the state section.
Thank you for sharing that. Next, under member recommendations and action. Well, let me close the public commentary and thank you for sharing the thoughts. At our last meeting, we received a presentation from Daniel Rumor proposing that the council host and possibly fund a Great Salt Lake Situation Assessment by the University of Utah's Environmental Dispute Resolution Program. We spent about 35 minutes hearing and discussing, so I don't want to, obviously don't have time to revisit the substance of that, but the council agreed and wanted to take some time to ponder and then determine at this meeting whether to approve the proposal, reject it, table it, or defer a decision. So I'd ask if there are any questions, comments, or if someone's ready to make a motion on that.
Mr. Ward. I've thought about it a bit. I'd like to really hold off and get some more information because I see some other positive traction on other fronts that we can maybe collaborate down the road, but I think wait and see how those develop would be good. So that'd be my motion as we have interest, but table it for now.
Okay. Is there a second?
I'll say that. I'm pretty supportive of that idea. I think it may be a good group, but I'm not sure it's a great fit for what we're working on here. We've got pretty good collaboration. Everyone understands the lake's going down, and we're moving that way, so I'm not sure what dispute we have. I think we just keep going. I agree tabling probably the right choice.
Okay. We've got a motion and a second. Is there any debate or discussion? All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Any abstentions? Okay, we'll table that and continue to gather information. Thanks, Tom. Okay, is there any other item that the council would like to raise? Our next meeting is March. Go ahead, David.
So under future action meetings, I thought we had talked about having additional report on the integrated water resource model that we helped push for. Legislature appropriated $400,000. It's supposed to be a major planning tool. We haven't heard much about it, so I'd like to recommend that we get a report on that, and possibly this could be tied in to send a letter to Department of Water Resources asking what the status is of the model and why it's not being used.
Okay, I hope we can include that on the agenda. And will a call suffice to? Okay, then after, if you're not satisfied with the report, we can certainly talk about action. There's another hand over here. Are you interested in having Mackenzie Stiles present on her dust impact on snowmelt? She's made two suggestions since she's out of state this today and the next meeting. She said she's happy to make a telephone report next meeting or try to accommodate our May date.
I have a question for Laura. Yeah. Is the technical, is that, if you want to just sit in on that and listen to that one?
Same thing.
Yeah.
So you can go to the tech meeting or you can wait and listen to the tech recording.
What about a report here?
That's the question yeah. that I'm asking.
I think that'd be good.
I'd rather have a person on the 8th than listen on the phone.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, we'll
continue. End of May.
We'll wait until we can find a date when she sure. actually is on the day. Any other topics for our next meeting or other issues you'd like to discuss as a council? Thank you for taking the time to be here. I appreciate it. I'll just counsel everyone else. Remember, you're not allowed to go out the door and let your name come to the roll. Where is the roll?
You're saying to provide a job.
We'll entertain a motion to adjourn. Randy, Jeff, second all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Extension.
You're building a
little bit.